This is one in a series of local history recordings under the auspices of the Public Library of Des Moines and the Iowa Commission for the Blind. The date is October 31st, 1973. The subject matter is Hoyt Sherman's history. Margaret Mellart is the person to be interviewed, and her present address is 4805 Grand Avenue.
Wait just a minute. See if this is on. Madam President and Madam Chairman and all new members of the Des Moines Women's Club, I'm really always very happy and glad to do this because it brings back so many memories. You have no idea. Because as a child, I lived right here on 15th Street. That is the old 15th Street. Nothing is as it used to be. Now, I don't even know it myself sometimes. And my grandmother lived up on the hill, Pleasant Street, which is hardly any more. She lived there for 40 years. And I happened to be taking a picture of the parking lot, the new parking lot, one day, and I looked up the street, and they were bulldozing my grandmother's house. I went up with my camera. I don't know why I wanted to take a picture of it, because it was a little heartbreaking at the time. But I did. And the man looked at me rather astonished, and I said, well, it was my grandmother's old home. Well, I figured as such, he said. Say, was there ever a cistern over there? And I said, oh, my goodness, yes. Grandmother never washed dishes in anything but soft water. Well, that fella says he's been filling in that hole all day. I lived in one of three houses here on 15th, which are still, I think all three are still here, called Bridal Row at that time. I suppose they were mostly brides and grooms and young children, at least. I was very, very young. But coming back to my grandmother's all those years made this a very familiar place. I used to make clover chains on the hill going down from what is now the auditorium. At least it seemed like a very large hill to me. Maybe it wasn't, but I think it was, because we used to coast in the wintertime. But we would make these clover chains and have halos around our head and make bracelets and so forth. Then, too, the Memorial Day Parade always went past here, and my grandfather, being a Civil War veteran, always marched. And it was our custom in our family to watch the parade from either the old Tuttle home across the street or over here on the Hoyt Sherman side. And it was a real sad day when my grandfather had to take to a car to ride in instead of walking to Woodland Cemetery. He thought that was a terrible disgrace. Well, he was a friend of Mr. Tuttle's over on the corner, and Hoyt Sherman, of course, too. That day also was my birthday. So after the parade, we all went up, the whole family, went to my grandmother's, and always I had a lovely birthday cake and ice cream on plates, which I still have in my possession. Those mean a great deal to me. Another thing I remember very well was the lamplighter who came down 15th Street on a bicycle, and he would light the old gas lights, lamps on the streets on 15th, and I don't know how far his tour took him. Also, I well remember in the early morning a real smoky smell. It was good, we thought in those days, but it certainly made one wash your curtains a lot more times than we do nowadays. Well, people always asked me when I was here as secretary, was this a home? Who was Hoyt Sherman? Well, did he have that auditorium when he was here? Well, of course, he didn't have that auditorium. How did he make his money? And when the men would come to piano recitals and get properly bored about the middle, they would come out into the hall and fairly fondle that woodwork. And then they'd come in and ask me more questions about all of this. So I finally had a history printed, and it's hanging in the front hall. And I always said, just go and read the history. Well, I would like to tell you a little bit about the Sherman family, because they certainly were an illustrious family. The original Shermans came from England. The parents of Hoyt Sherman were Charles R. and Mary, and they came from Connecticut to Lancaster, Ohio in 1811. Their firstborn, Charles, rode on a pillow, horseback, in front of his mother, from Connecticut to Ohio. Can you imagine that? He opened a law office. They had 11 children, 6 boys and 5 girls. The father became a judge of the Supreme Court of Ohio and died as a very young man, I mean 40, which is quite young. But I think Mrs. Sherman must have been a very capable and efficient person to have brought up such a large family and have become very famous men at that time. Charles, the one who wrote on the pillow, became a noted jurist. He was a member of the Supreme Court of Ohio and the United States. William Tecumseh, of course, the noted general, and recognized as such throughout the world. James became one of the leading merchants of Cincinnati and later in Des Moines. John became a congressman in the United States Senate. He was also U.S. Treasurer. He was a noted financier and a great statesman, diplomat and councilman in councils of all nations. He was appointed Secretary of State by President McKinley in 1898. Lamson, probably better known around Des Moines, was an educator and editor of the Weekly Gazette. He was also U.S. collector of internal revenue, believe it or not, even then. He was a civic leader. Now Hoyt came here in 1848, 6 months before his 21st birthday. He started selling land, and he read law under Robert L. Tidrick. In 1849, he was admitted to the bar. 2 years later, he helped build the first post office. He was a first on most everything. Of course, he was in on the ground floor. He helped build the, he established in 1854 the establishment of Hoyt Sherman and Company, a private bank. Later, the State Bank of Iowa. On Christmas 1855, he married Sarah Moulton in Mansfield, Ohio. They came to Des Moines from Ohio to Iowa City by cars, that means by train. And from there on, no railroad, so they came by carriage from Iowa City. By New Year's Day, he announced plans for the state's largest and finest office building, the Sherman Block at 3rd and Court Avenue. He was a rich man by 1861. He was commissioned major and served as a Union paymaster during the Civil War. That is why he was always called Major Hoyt Sherman. They had 3 boys, 4 girls, 2 died in infancy. Frank, Charles, Arthur, Addie, who became Mrs. Wyborg, and Helen, who became Mrs. Griffiths, and died in 1961. And I used to get an occasional letter from her in her last years. He also helped establish the First Street Railway. Maybe we need him right now. Public schools and colleges, waterworks. And I think he was secretary of the Associated Charities here for many, many years, 16 years. He also helped establish the Equitable of Iowa. The first president was Mr. Cassidy, the second Mr. Allen, B.F. Allen, and Mr. Sherman was president for 14 years. Sometime when you're in the lobby of the Equitable Building, you will see a bronze plaque by the elevators. I'm sure you've never noticed it before, but maybe you will now. By 1850, the Pursley Estate, on which this building has been built, was ordered subdivided and was going to be sold at auction. Well, Mr. Sherman had $95, and that day he became clerk of the auction sale and was paid $5. So he beat out the nearest bidder and bought this property, 5 acres, for $100. He built a small house at first. Then, of course, this house was built in 1877. Many famous people have been here. General Sherman was here many times, and it was at one of those times that my mother got his autograph through his sister, Helen Sherman Griffiths, who was a friend of hers, and it now hangs in the front hall, you will be told. General and Mrs. U.S. Grant also were here. Major McKinley, who was then Major McKinley. There was a GAR reunion here at one time when there were three generals, Grant, Sheridan, and Sherman. But you know, there's always a woman a little responsible for these men who become so famous. I would like to read from the column in the paper at the time of Mrs. Sherman's death in 1887. Mrs. Sherman was of those who came to the young Des Moines and by her good heart helped to shape it into the beautiful city of noble society which it has generally come to be. She came here early in January 1856, which then was a primitive town of Fort Des Moines of less than 2,000 population, being then only 19 years of age. The only communication with the outside world was a long, dreary ride by stagecoach of 130 miles, and all sources of pleasure and amusement were among themselves. You see, that was Iowa City, 130 miles. The hospitable home of Mr. and Mrs. B.F. Allen was open to the young stranger, and it was for many months a true home to her. As you know, the home of the Hubble family was built by Mr. B.F. Allen, who in earlier days was Mr. Sherman's very good friend. She very soon took a prominent part in the social life of the town, and before the end of the year, her own home on the corner of Walnut and Sixth Streets was finished and was one of the social centers of the little town. In later years, as old settlers tell us, Mrs. Sherman, Mrs. Allen, and Mrs. Thomas Hatfield, all young married people, were inseparable friends, the life of Des Moines society, and all constant workers in church, charity, and every good and tender thing. During the war for the Union, Mrs. Sherman was always among the foremost in securing aid and comforts for the soldiers at the front. By fairs, festivals, and societies, and in many other ways, the women of the North bore their share of the burden of the war, and she was always active and liberal with both time and means in providing for the comfort of soldiers in camp and hospital. In after years, she was identified in the charitable work of the Relief Society as an officer and gave several years' effort in that direction. But her charitable work, extending through her entire life, was largely through private channels and among the needy families of her near neighborhood and acquaintances. She was never more happy than in her own home with children around her. And now I would like to read from a diary which was written by Mrs. Sherman's sister, Mrs. Wyman, who was a relative. This is Mrs. Wyman, who was a relative of Grace Wyman, former kindergarten teacher at Greenwood School. Now, maybe some of you went to school to her. I don't need those. And my children went to school to her. Now, this was written December 16, 1899. The old year and the old century are near their end. Soon we'll greet 1900. How strange it seems. March 1904. 4 years since I last wrote in this book. First, Ada Sherman's death in February 1900. She was Frank's wife, Hoyt's and Sarah's oldest son. I was sent for to come over to the Sherman home and afterwards came back and stayed here nearly a year. That summer, the Wymans came up here to the Sherman house to live, while Hoyt, Frank, and Sarah went to Amagansett, Long Island, to spend the summer. They returned in September, and I stayed till Thanksgiving, when I went back to the Wyman home. They got along very well without me. Nettie had everything her own way. In just 2 years from Ada's death, Frank was stricken with paralysis and lingered 2 months, dying March 1, 1902, almost on the anniversary of his mother's death. Again, I came over and stayed till the family went east and the Wymans came over. And now in about 2 years from Frank's death, Hoyt died. He was taken on January 1st with pneumonia and was sick in bed 3 weeks, dying January 25th, 1904. He was the last of a notable family of 11 brothers and sisters. His death is felt more in the town than that of many others, as he was interested in so many things. He came to Des Moines in 1848 and had helped to build it. He was a strong man in every way and was sought after for his advice and excellent judgment in business and private affairs. Since his death, Arthur and I have kept the house, Sarah being away to school in St. Catherine's Hall, Davenport, Iowa. She will be 16 in May, a beautiful girl in face and character, beloved by all for her gentle, lovable ways. She will be home next week for Easter vacation. When the children, Addie Wyborg, Helen Sherman Griffith, and Charles, come next month, there will be a breaking up of this home and the effects divided. Hoyt left a good estate, an income of $15,000 a year, and many real estate investments. This place consists of 5 acres of desirable residence property, and the house stands right in the middle of the grounds. They value the lot worth at least $50,000, but what will they do with the house? Tear it down, as it is in the way? It seems a pity to tear down this fine house, built so substantially in 1877. I remember how proud Sister Sarah was of it. She enjoyed it 10 years only. It is built of brick with all improvements, with black walnut and hard pine woodwork, with floors and wainscoting in dining room and music room. There is a long, wide hall through the center, finished in black wainscoting, with same wood in a wide staircase, with carved pillars in front or at the foot. The old clock stands just under the first turn of the staircase. The library opens to the right as you go in the front door, with heavy folding doors that are kept open. Back of the library is the large dining room with big square window facing east. A large mahogany sideboard is built into a niche prepared for it. Mahogany table and chairs complete the furniture. On the left of the hall, opposite the library, is the drawing room, richly decorated and furnished. Back of this, the music room, with large doors between, always kept open except when one of the family dies, when the casket is placed in the drawing room and the wide doors closed. The music room contains an upright piano and Arthur's pianola. Several musical instruments are lying about, a guitar, mandolin, and banjo. The family are all musical. The mother was a good singer and left her talent with the children, especially Addie and Arthur. Upstairs there are 4 large rooms and 1 small bedroom. besides the servants' two rooms that open off from the second building, from the second landing. There are marble mantels and open grates in three of the rooms, with many large windows with south and east exposure. Hoyt died in the northwest chamber, Frank in the southwest, and Sarah in the southeast chamber. There are besides a servants' dining room, butler's pantry, and kitchen with other pantries. There are porches both back and front, and a handsome vestibule in front. There are dressing rooms with bath and marble washstand in two of the rooms, and a large bathroom besides. There is a large brick barn with horses, and several carriages, sleighs, and so forth. The house is surrounded by noble elms and maples, in which Mr. Sherman took great pride, as well as in the large grassy lawn. There are closets from every room and a basement under the whole house, divided into rooms and more closets that are dark and mysterious. In the attic is a large room and one plastered room where the clothing of the last ones are stored. It has been my painful duty to put away all their clothing so that the place seems almost haunted, if I believed in such things. And now my duty with the Sherman family closes. I do not know where I shall go, nor what I shall do. There is nothing much more forlorn than a poor old widow wandering about the world. I would like to join the procession and go to California. I never have heard whether she did that or not. Maybe I do need that. We have the original of that. In 1895, Mercy Hospital had use of the old homestead. Mr. Sherman decided the big house was too much for him, but that was only for a year. He couldn't stand it. He just had to come back and lived here until his death. Now, the Women's Club, you probably wonder where they came in, was organized earlier in 1885 with about 20 women. They began meeting in the homes of members. As the club grew, they met in various cities and various places in the city, including the churches, the KP and Good Templars Hall, the Yeoman Hall, Savory Hotel, Plymouth Church, YMCA. At the latter, they had the use of the fifth floor. And in October, they were asked to bring to a meeting one cup, one plate, and one spoon, so they would have something to have some refreshments. In October of 1893, the chairman of the property committee made the following report. 40 cups, 51 plates, 4 saucers, 2 dishpans, 1 tea kettle, 1 pail, 1 dipper, 1 tea caddy, 1 mop handle, 1 broom, 2 large chairs, 1 large table. In 1894, there were 136 members, 96 present, 12 late. Just to show you, women can change their minds, I read in the minutes, it was moved and carried that no old house be purchased with a view to using it as a clubhouse. Well, during these years, of course, the women had great interest in obtaining art objects, pictures, and so forth. There were many gifts of money and pictures also. Among the earliest purchases was this Loading the Caravan, the large picture here, about which you will be told. Also, the Joan of Arc in the auditorium lobby was one of the first 3 purchases. Now, they were always... ready to obtain other pictures, but in recent years we have not done that because the Art Center takes care of that need in our city. But we do try to take care of the ones which we have. In 1907, after this, I'm sorry, I have to turn that off. Mr. Sherman died in 1904, and this house was sold to the city in 1907 for $14,500, always to be known as Hoyt Sherman Place. The park commissioners had been working with the women's club, hoping they could find a place for the women's club to build a home. And so it was bought at that time on a 49-year lease. They had to get a special legislative action. Not at that time, but later on, to get a 99-year lease, they had to get legislative action so they could keep it a long time. If they would maintain a public art gallery open 3 days a week to be named as Hoyt Sherman Place. After the remodeling, this room was the first one that was added, and for many years the women's club used this room as their meeting place. But they were growing all the time, and in 1915 and 16 they made plans for an auditorium. But the war came along, so that was put off until 1920, and then they had the 99-year lease, so they felt that that would take care of all of their needs at that time. In 1934, it was all paid for. The auditorium, $171,600. And maybe you think you all work today, but I can tell you that they did a lot of things in those days. Among them, two concerts by the St. Louis Symphony made $2,300. Winter garden parties, dinner parties, musicals, luncheons, breakfast, teas and bazaars, calico ball, old-time supper and dance, old-fashioned evening when 300 crowded along long tables for old supper tables set with candelabra, revolving silver casters, spoon holders, beautiful old-fashioned china, costumes where women were bast, bustled, and whale-boned, feather fans, trains, and hoop skirts, a just-for-fun stunt day, sideshows and so forth, pictures. Things were sold like hand lotion, Easter lilies, opal gel, Hawkeye tires, and Manhattan oil. Mrs. Clyde Brenton was the champion tire seller. Delicious homemade candy, pretty summer dresses, from little ears of golden corn to auto club memberships. From indestructible pearl necklaces, glory, weren't they pretty, and didn't Mrs. Carroll sell stacks of them, to demonstrating Libby's milk, from selling Hutchinson ice cream, to walking through the Cascade Laundry, to running the Kresge 10-cent store. At the time the auditorium was built, Major Byers, who had been a very close friend of General Sherman and the Sherman and entire Sherman family, having no relatives to leave his treasures to, and Mrs. Byers was gone, decided to leave them with the women's club if they would build a room to house them, which they did at the time the auditorium was built. And that is why that is called the Byers Room. That was named for Major Byers. It isn't because you go in there and buy anything. Major Byers was consul to Zurich, Switzerland, and also to Italy for 24 years. He entertained such friends as James Russell Lowell and Mark Twain. His home was and is, I think, still, just across from the Hubble Mansion on whichever that street right there. It's an old brick, and I think it has the bronze label on it. You might look and see. 1950, we still were beginning to change things, but always trying to retain the original as much as possible. That is when the remodeling was done in the kitchen, a dining room was put upstairs, and the new kitchen. Then in a few years, the auditorium, as soon as we got more money, the auditorium was renovated, new carpeting, new drapes, new everything, new rugs. Then came the parking lot and so forth and so on. I think most of you know the rest of the things that have been done here. And the girl, women guides who are here today, and I will introduce them in just a few minutes, will be in each room to tell you. We have had famous speakers on our platform, including Otis Skinner, Madame Schumann-Heink, Will Durant, Hamlin Garland, George McManus, Will Rogers, Edgar Guest, Parks Cadman, Frederick March, Ruth Bryan Owen, Amelia Earhart, and many, many others. And we are constantly being complimented by our speakers. Even just last night, when Civic Music had their concert here, many people came over here and were delighted with the building who had never been in before. We go to Europe, you know, to see old historical buildings, and I am glad that people here are beginning to realize the value in restoration and will preserve some of these things, not tear down every single thing that they want to tear down for something modern. I still think that the old federal building could be used by the people at the courthouse if we just pushed a little harder. People of Des Moines really owe a great deal to the pioneering women who have had the courage and the foresight to have built this wonderful establishment. And I think we absorb the pride of our past officers and members in the new officers who are promoting the welfare of the women's club. I'd like to read from what was in the minutes when Mrs. at the time the building was complete, the day the keys were turned over by Mrs. H.L. Carroll, chairman of the building committee. We of the building committee have done the best we know how, and if we could place one little brick in this new clubhouse, we would place it there that coming generations might be benefited thereby. For to live in the hearts we leave behind is not to die. And now, dear President, the time has arrived for the building committee to place in your keeping the keys of this beautiful club home. To some of us, it has meant years of forward looking. It is the culmination of all the past years of our work, our aspirations, our memories, our joys, and our sorrows. May it be the home of the Des Moines Women's Club for many, many years. Take it, guard it faithfully, love it.
Today is Lincoln's birthday, February 12, 1974. Margaret Meller is here again with us today to be interviewed not only about Hoyt Sherman Place, but about her own life in the Des Moines of the past. Her present address is, what is it, Margaret?
4805 Grand Avenue.
And your age now?
77, going on 78.
Good. You've had a nice, long life. The same age as my father. Let's go back just a minute and explain that on the first side of the tape, you were talking to a woman's group at Hoyt Sherman Place, and that a tour was going to follow your talk.
So that's right. I was talking to the new members.
Right. So some of the things that you said in the tape could be explained in that way, that some of the things that might seem left out, it was because they would be talked about later on in smaller groups around Hoyt Sherman Building. Now, you were executive secretary for 25 years, weren't you?
That's right.
At Hoyt Sherman. Could you tell us a little bit about those 25 years? Anything interesting particularly stand out in your mind?
Well, they were all very interesting. Each year would be a new president. Some people would ask me how in the world I could get along with that many women.
Now, let's clarify this. A president of
the Women's Club.
The Des Moines Women's
the
Club.
The Des Moines Women's Club. That is right. But I always could find something very fine in each new president, and we always got along very well.
Now, going back to the first side of our tape, I'd like to specify some of the addresses on residences in the area. The exact address of Hoyt Sherman Place is what?
It is called 1501 Woodland Avenue, but it takes the whole block from 15th to 16th.
And when you talked about your home, it was at what block?
On 15th Street, north of Woodland Avenue, the north half of the block, which would be, I believe, in the 600 block.
600 block of 15th Street. Now, also, you said you lived on Pleasant.
My grandparents lived 1415 Pleasant Street.
And what year was this, do you suppose?
When I lived up there? Previous to 1904.
So around 1902, right, 1903. I think so. Mm-hmm. Okay. You also mentioned the Tuttle place. Would you tell us where that was?
The Tuttles lived at the on the northeast corner of 15th and Woodland, across from White Sherman Place.
And one other question before we continue. You mentioned that Hoyt and Sarah had several children, one of which was Frank. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yes. Okay. Right. And then mm-hmm. Frank had a daughter named after his mother, Sarah.
That's right.
So the Sarah that we talk about in the diary is the granddaughter.
That's right. The granddaughter of Hoyt Sherman.
Right. Okay. Now let's go on and talk a little bit about your life in early Des Moines. Were you born here in Des Moines?
Yes, I was born at Tracy Home, which was a maternity home at that time, and it was about near Mercy Hospital, where Mercy Hospital is now, about 5th and Ascension, somewhere around in there.
And you lived where then, when your mother took you home from the hospital?
I think we went back to my grandmother's home at that time.
And that, you mentioned, was on Pleasant Street.
That's right. And later on, we lived up on Center Street, about 20th and Center.
Now, when you were a young girl, you said you moved to Grand Avenue.
That's right.
Tell me about your address there and about your life, early days on Grand Avenue.
About 1904, we moved to 5200 Grand Avenue. We always call it just 52nd and Grand, but it later on had a number of 5200.
Now, is that house still?
That house is still there. It had been a farmhouse in the early day, but it is still there. We had 5 acres. We planted the back 2 acres in an orchard. We had apples and cherries and mostly apples. And then the next 2 acres, the middle 2 acres seemed to be brush, but it was hazelnut brush with a small creek running through it and always had water in it. And then the front acre, mostly the where the house was, and a beautiful yard with a 300-foot frontage.
I bet you found a lot of things to do in that big yard.
Oh, not only in the yard, but in the whole acreage, because we had a path that ran from the front clear to the end of the 5 acres. And my brother and I used to play horse. He would be the horse, and we had a rope tied around him, and we would go back and forth through that. We also would take lunches down and sit on the creek, and we would see all the birds, beautiful birds.
Now, where was this creek?
I don't know where it came from, but it went all through the 5 acres and on down through to 56th Street, I presume.
So this is south of your house and west.
South and west. It went west. It also went over to the west of us, way back, where there was a very large stone. We always called it the soapstone. I mean a great big boulder, but it was flat. We always thought we could get our hands cleaner if we washed our hands in that water that ran over that stone. I'm sure it is still there, and someday I'm going to walk back there and find it.
Now, this was about 1904, would you say?
From 1904 till 1911, I lived there.
Oh.
7 years.
Uh-huh. And what were the roads like then?
Oh, roads. It was just a clay bank out in front. It was gumbo part of the time. When we'd have big rains, it was really gumbo. We had wooden crossings at 51st Street and at 56th, and other than that, you waited if you had to go across.
What kind of boots did you wear?
Interesting.
We wore overshoes. Of course, we wore high shoes, and we had overshoes. Rubbers would come off.
How did you get onto the wooden crossings?
How did we get onto the crossing?
Mm-hmm.
Just from the side of the street, we had paths. We didn't have sidewalks, but we had paths on each side of the street.
Did you have planks leading up to the crossings?
Well, the crossings were
planks.
You couldn't
step onto them.
The crossings were planks. And where the buggies would go over the planks would get all muddy. And I know if my mother wanted to go someplace, my father would go down with his shovel and clean it off before he let her cross the street.
So they were flat, right on.
They were flat.
They were flat, rather than
that's right.
The
that's
six
right.
or 8 feet
mm-hmm.
high one.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, they were flat.
How far out west did the houses go on Grand?
They went as far as 56th Street, and then on down the hill, there was the Murrow Farm, which was at 59th and Grand Avenue. But mostly houses only went as far as 56 that I remember.
Tell us about your school days. I hear that you went to Jordan School.
Well, it later was called Walnut Hill School, and it was just two doors east of where I lived. It was a two-room schoolhouse.
Now, it was on Grand Avenue.
On Grand Avenue, which I suppose would be 5100 and a half, or 50, because it was not 52nd, it was not 51st. It was in the middle of the block. There was one house next to it, east, between that and 51st. It was one teacher. The lower four grades was taught by one teacher, and at one time it was a Miss Jordan. I can't remember her first name. And Miss Bain was the teacher who taught the four upper grades. She lived across the street on Grand Avenue, just west of the Jordan Church, which was at 53rd and Grand Avenue.
Now, why were all these, the school and the church was named Jordan? Was there a reason for that?
Oh, yes. The Jordan family were a very well-known old, old family in West Des Moines.
Could you tell us anything about the Jordan family?
No, I can't. But I think there is a record of the family.
When you came home...
Can you?
Well, go ahead.
Uh-huh. You could there.
I was just going to say briefly, he was... involved in the Underground Railroad. He was responsible for moving the capital from Iowa City to Des Moines, and he was also responsible for the railroads going through the state of Iowa.
Thank you. Now, this Mrs. Jordan, and that was your teacher, was a relative of, was that his wife that was your...
No, I think it was his daughter.
His daughter. Is she still living?
No, I doubt very much if she is.
Well, after school, what did you do when you got home? Were you expected to help at home?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. If my mother was making a dress for me, Margaret, there are the dishes. And that's what we had to do. But we were not held down to it too much. I had a brother, and he and I had lots of fun together. But we did have lots of children in the neighborhood. Among them, I might mention the Kurtzwell family, who lived a few doors west of us. And they later moved to Altoona. And Mr. Kurtzwell was, I believe, a founder of the, he was the founder of the Des Moines Seed Company. They were very interested in that sort of horticulture.
What were your favorite games after school? Did you have some?
Oh, we had, I might say we built a barn when we moved out to this place. For our potential animals, which we expected to get. And my parents had never been out on an acreage before, so they tried to raise chickens and ducks and turkeys. We had cats and dogs, and my brother used to trap rabbits going down through the snow. He had two or three traps set always in the wintertime. And then my parents had quite a garden. They tried to raise everything and anything they ever heard of. And there also was a blackberry patch, and of course we had strawberry patch. Oh, we roamed the acres. We had lots of fun doing things outdoors. My father built a merry-go-round for us made of a very long, heavy plank and a big bolt set into a big post in the middle, and that was loads of fun. We had a very high bag swing tied to a way up in a great big elm tree, which Margaret Perry, do you remember being in your yard?
Yeah, I remember.
Elm tree and that great big branch that went across there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get a stepladder and climb to the top of the stepladder and jump on the bag swing, and then we would swing clear out over the acreage. It was lots of fun.
What'd you eat after school? Did you know, boys and girls come home now and have cookies and milk. What did you have?
I have no recollection. Whether I was hungry or not, I don't know.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And of course, you took a lunch to school,
yes.
Did you come home?
Oh, when I went to Walnut Hill School, I went home.
Now, where was Walnut Hill?
This was the little school, the little two-room school.
You call
two doors.
You call it Jordan School and
Walnut
Hill.
Well, we did call it Jordan at one time, and then later on. It was Walnut Hill School, and it was under the Valley Junction school system. That was the reason that after I was ready to go into the seventh grade, the mothers in the district were trying to get the school under the Des Moines school system because they didn't feel that we were getting enough education in this small school. So at that time, it was severed from the Valley Junction district and put into the Des Moines school district. So where I lived, so that I could go to Greenwood School. And we walked from my home at 52nd and Grand to Greenwood School at 37th south of Grand.
That's a long walk.
Except in, and of course, we took our lunch. Once in a while, we would, in very bad weather, we would go to Greenwood Park Station, which was at 48th and Grand Avenue, and catch the streetcar, the Ingersoll streetcar, and ride down to 37th Street. To 36th Street, really, because 37th was not cut through. Then we would have to walk up to Grand Avenue and on down to Greenwood School, south of Grand. So it really was about as easy to walk as it was to ride the streetcar.
Tell us about the streetcar a little bit. How did it...
They ran, of course, quite often. The Ingersoll streetcar ran as far as 48th and Grand and brought people to Greenwood Park and Ingersoll Park. The Valley Junction car went straight through on Ingersoll Avenue and on out to Valley Junction. The streetcar that came to Greenwood Park also would let the people off at Ingersoll Park, which was the Riverview or the entertainment amusement park on the corner of Hook Boulevard between Ingersoll and Grand, and it went east as far as 44th Street. A very large roller coaster, one of the most thrilling, I always thought. Of course, I was young then. And we had the old mill, shooting galleries, most anything that you could imagine. There was a monkey house. We could watch the monkeys play. And T. Fred Henry was the bandmaster of those days, and there was a lovely bandstand. Everybody who came to see the theater, in which I should tell you,
was
the Orpheum Circuit, and the theater park was down in the hollow, which is now across from where the Art Center is, the present Art Center in Greenwood Park. But it was down pretty much at the bottom of the hill. There also was a lake to the east of it. And east of the lake, it went up a hill, and there were many elk that were browsed around there. We could go to see the elk. Also over in Greenwood, there was quite a buffalo herd. So there was much entertainment all around there all the time. Now, of course, this amphitheater was only for summer shows. And it was always great fun. Once in a while, Mother would let us go down. And we would stand on the outside. We could stand at the little fence on the outside and see the whole show for nothing. So we would especially like to hear the musical numbers. And I would like to go home and pick out the songs afterward on the piano that I had heard. Also, we would learn all the dances and all the funny jokes that we could remember, but most of all, the acrobats. We had two trapezes in the hayloft of our barn. Then we would go home and we would try to perform all of these acrobatic stunts. That was more fun.
Tell us about where the, the actresses stayed when they come to Des Moines. Did they have hotels for them?
At this place where the streetcar turned around at 48th and Grand, and by the way, I live right by this place at the present moment.
What is your address now? 4805,
mm-hmm. And I've lived there for 53 years. This had a little rustic, what they call the Greenwood Park Station. It was operated by a family, and they had rooms there for rent, a few rooms. And in the summertime, when these actors and actresses would come to town, they would stay there rather than go through downtown. It was quite a trek to go through downtown anyway at that time. So when they didn't want to stay there, they would go around the neighborhood and try to find a place where they could stay. One day, there was a knock at our door. Two nice-looking women wanted to know if we had any rooms for rent. And Mother knew about these actors and actresses that did this, and she said, oh, no, we didn't have any room. Well, what about the barn? At that time, it was brand new. So Mother said, well, you can go out and look, but there isn't anything out there. But at that time, we had no animals, of course. They went out and looked, and they saw a bedstead standing there, and they saw a potential bedroom. So they worked my parents into fixing it up for them, for a place for them to stay. My father had a workbench made of a couple of planks, and he fixed that all up for a dressing table. Mother got a mirror. The bedstead was put up. I don't know where they got the mattress, but they got it somewhere. put a piece of mosquito netting over the great big barn door. I might say that connecting the barn was the chicken house at the far end, but in between was our outdoor bathroom. It was concealed. My mother said when she moved out to the acreage, she was going to have a concealed bathroom. So the actresses had their bathroom, a private one almost. We loved to be with these women. They were very entertaining. They took Mother's sewing machine out there and stayed an extra week. Usually they were on week schedules, but they had a week vacation, so they spent the extra week at this place out in the country and sewed and sewed, had themselves quite a time.
You mentioned your mother sewing clothes for you. Where would she buy your material?
Well, at that time, Yonkers was downtown, Harris Emery's was downtown, and Mandelbaum's was a very good store. Oh, you could buy a material, but of course you had to go downtown to buy it.
Now, you say downtown. What do you, would you say was the center of town at that time?
Oh, I would say probably from 4th to 7th Street on Walnut, and some on Locust Street. I might say that my grandfather on the other side of the house, on my father's side, and his father had operated a leather and saddlery store at 313 Walnut Street for many, many, many years. And that's where my father worked. So that part of the business would go farther down Walnut, but where they would buy materials and dry goods store. And I remember Namer's Drugstore. Oh, how I love to go to Namer's Drugstore because they had the best maple mousse.
Now, what's that?
Oh,
I don't even know what that is.
A creamy ice cream, evidently with a maple flavor. It was one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. What else was in the drugstore that isn't around
That's
today?
That's all I remember.
What about groceries? Where did your family buy their groceries?
We bought most of our groceries, I believe. When I lived out there, there was a Fred Kaufman grocery store at 39th and Grand Avenue, a little tiny store on the south side at 39th and Grand Avenue, and we bought most of our things there. Some people, and we did have our cow, of course, so that we had our own butter and cream and milk, and we had our own eggs and garden things, so there was a lot that we had.
Well, now, if your father was at work all day, did your mother go down there by herself and pick up groceries, or how did you do that?
They had deliveries.
Oh.
Oh, yes.
They had how did your mother...
Deliveries in those days.
Did you have telephones?
Yes, we did have a telephone.
I was just going to ask, how did she inform them?
We did have a telephone.
So she'd call them, and then they would deliver in the horse and buggy, or...?
They had a wagon, as I remember.
Now, where did your father put his horse when he went to work? Did he take it?
He didn't have, we didn't have a horse.
You didn't?
No,
how did
we
he,
didn't,
he
no.
go on the streetcar?
Yes, he went on the streetcar.
That brings up something else. So, what's the first car you remember? Did any of your neighbors have a car?
Yes, our next door neighbor, Mr. Trisler, who ran a stationery store in the early day down on, I think it was on Locust Street. I wouldn't say for sure. And don't ask me what the kind of a car it was, because I don't remember, but it was red.
What year car? Would you know that?
Well, it was between 1904 and 1911.
Uh-huh.
I would say about 1908.
Uh-huh.
I was invited to go with them one day to Prairie City, which was a long trip. They had a little girl, and I was a few years older, but we had a nice time together, so I was invited to go along. We went down in the morning for dinner. We stayed for dinner, and I'm not sure what time we started back, but we didn't get back until 8 o'clock that night because we had had three or four punctures.
Oh.
And while he had a spare, one spare tire, he had to repair the others on the way.
And he had to
each
do this
time.
Himself?
He had to do it all himself because he was the only man. I remember it was a beautiful moonlight summer night.
Did they have filling stations in those days?
No.
How'd you get gas?
No.
Yes, where'd you get gasoline?
No, I don't know. It was just in the car when I knew about it.
What about mail service? Where did you get your mail?
Oh, we got our mail at Greenwood Park Station. We had to walk down to it. But anybody going or coming on the streetcar would pick it up as they came.
And you say that was about 48th and Grand?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
On the north side of the street.
Where did you move after 1911?
I moved to 717 45th Street Place, which is just south of Roosevelt High School now.
Mm-hmm. Is that house still there?
That house is still there. There is one house north of it, and then there's the freeway.
Mm-hmm. By the time you moved in 1911, how old were you?
Well, I was...
About a teenager.
I was a teenager.
Well, what did you young people do in those days for activities?
Well, I remember before we moved, the young people in the neighborhood at on Grand Avenue who went to the Jordan Church and nearby places had the idea we wanted to have a box supper. But where were we going to have it? There was simply no place to have it. But there was a basement in the church. Nobody had ever been in it. But we decided we would go and look, and we did. It had not been used for years and years and years. There were cobwebs. There was dirt piled everywhere. But we all got busy, cleaned up the place, and decorated it, and had a ball. We really had more fun. I think it's the only time that room was ever used, though.
Well, for heaven's sake.
That I know.
Well, were you allowed to go on dates with young men by yourself when you got a little older?
Oh, yes.
What did you do on a date in those days?
Oh, well, a lot of times we would stay home and make fudge. We'd spend the evening making fudge.
Oh, really?
And turn on the Victrola. Maybe we'd dance a little bit. And we might have another couple with us. We might take walks. Oh, we did. We thought we had a real good time. We didn't have to have cars and go out in the country.
You said to me before we started taping something about the fact that you had seen Sarah Bernhardt.
Oh, yes. At the time of Ingersoll Park, she was to have been on the program. This was happened to be the Orpheum Circuit, which furnished the entertainment for Ingersoll Park. There were matinees, and there were also evening performances. I'm not sure that the matinees were every day. But we heard there was a fire down at Ingersoll Park, and we all went down to see what was happening. I sat on the Greenwood Park side watching the fire when someone came and told me that a very few feet from me was Sarah Bernhardt, who was to have appeared that night.
Mm.
So I knew she was a famous actress, but other than that, I wasn't so greatly impressed. Well, she didn't appear.
No. Well, when you did go to the theater, how much did you pay to see?
Well, we didn't very often go inside. We just could go maybe a couple of nights a week because we could walk down there, and it was fun entertainment. Mother would take us down. So we didn't very often go in. I think The downstairs went about 50 to 75 cents, and I think in the balcony was 10 cents.
So that's expensive, though, thinking 75 cents. In those days, that's very expensive.
Yeah.
Did you have a cotillion down in that area, too, where you could hear bands and summer nights?
Well, T. Fred Henry had his band concert, but no dance, no.
Mm-hmm. Now,
later on, they did have a dance pavilion at Greenwood, but that was probably along about 1915.
Do you know why they got rid of the Ingersoll Park? I know it's just houses now.
I suppose things became run down, perhaps, and maybe somebody wanted to buy it at a much greater profit. Somebody wanted to make some money, I imagine.
Now, of course, right across the street on the south side was Greenwood Park.
That's right.
And it was there as far back as you can remember?
As far back as I can remember. I used to skate on the lake.
Is that a natural lake coming from the creek?
Yes, it is. A spring.
It's a spring.
And at one time, the west edge of the bank washed out, and all the water went out of that lake. I have seen the bottom of Greenwood Lake.
Oh,
it's very, very deep in the middle.
It is. Uh-huh.
You also mentioned when you went on the streetcars that they had mailboxes.
Yes, there was always a mailbox fastened on the back of a car, of a streetcar. And you could always mail a letter, and sometimes if the motorman would see you and you'd wave your letter at him, he would stop and especially let you mail that letter. I'm sure that wouldn't be done today.
Yeah, did you get a newspaper every day? Was there a Des Moines paper?
Oh, yes. My brother carried papers. He carried both the Register and the Tribune.
Is that right? It was the Register and Tribune then?
Mm-hmm. That was cold within it then.
Yes. Well, he had a very long route. I used to go with him on Sundays because he was a little fellow. He was younger than I. He had a little teddy wagon to carry the papers.
Now, what's teddy wagon?
Little coaster wagon.
Jolly coaster
he also
wagon.
He began at Greenwood Park Station where he picked up his papers. This might be quite interesting to one who doesn't know the territory. Went down through Greenwood Park to what we call Coaldale. There were two coal mines down there by the railroad track. And a great many miners lived down there. They had their little square homes which the coal companies furnished them. We delivered many papers down there. Then he went along Welker Avenue to 56th Street, back Grand Avenue to 51st, and down 51st to the end of 51st. I don't remember how many customers, but it was a long,
that's a
long
rough route.
Long, twice
a
day.
How did he get from Welker to 56th? Did he go through the woods down that way?
No, there was a lane down there.
There was a lane.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's a home down there yet, the Heller home, which was there at that time.
Now, what about the railroads? Did you hear many trains going by then?
There would be trains, but I don't remember hearing them very much. One thing I remember of seeing one time from my south bedroom window at 5200 Grand was looking over and seeing the forest, the farmers burning off their straw, I suppose, or something, way, way over, miles and miles and miles, and it always worried me. My mother tried to assure me that the farmers were just getting rid of their...
You could see the farmers
from over
there?
You could see the fire, and I was afraid it would come over and reach us.
Where were these farms from your window?
From the south window, way, way over, across the Raccoon River, way beyond the Raccoon
River. You could see that.
Oh, yes.
Just think of that, it's all the houses now, you never could.
You never could now.
The trees weren't as large either.
Well, I guess you're right.
The trees grow too, you know.
Now, where did you go to school when you moved to your new address in 1911? You said you
I went to West High.
By West High.
And West High was at 15th and Center Street.
So that still was a long walk, wasn't
That's
it?
That's right. We would have to walk down to Ingersoll Avenue, take the Ingersoll car, or we could take the Valley Junction car, either one then. Get off at 15th and Grand and walk up to Center Street.
Do you remember when the war started? The First World War, does
World
it,
War One?
Uh-huh. Does that give you any memories?
Oh, yes. My husband was in World War One. My two sons in World War Two. My father was in the Spanish-American, my grandfather in the Civil War, so I've had family in every war.
Do you remember any impressions about the war in 1917 when it started? Do you remember any?
Oh, I certainly do. I was married in June, on June 1st, 1917. My husband left in July for training, and the next 2 years he was off to the Navy. I happened to spend part of that time at Camp Dodge hostess house. I was information hostess part of the time, and then later on was business hostess.
The Camp Dodge where it is today.
Camp Dodge where it is today, yes. But the main street where the hostess house was, the YWCA hostess house, would be a little hard to find, but one could do it.
Well, Mrs. Miller, this has been very enlightening and so much fun this afternoon. Thank you very much. We enjoyed it.
You're welcome.